Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves. And I have one of my favorite people, Lee Whittier, is joining us this evening. And Lee is a former AKC representative. She is a judge. She is the guiding light of Dog Show Mentor, which we've talked about on this program before. And Lee and I tonight are going to discuss judging and judges. One of the hottest topics always in dogs, correctly?
Yes, it is.
There's a new rumor every day. You know it. It's true. And so I wanted Lee and I to talk a little bit about this and give people the opportunity to hear from a current judge. I am an aspiring judge, someone who's a rep who dealt with people who were applying to judge. So there's lots of different angles that we're covering here. So welcome, Lee.
You know, what a lot of people don't know is when I lived on the East Coast before I moved out to the Pacific Northwest, I went through 5 application cycles. Mm. And what that verbiage means is I applied for first Rottweilers, and then I could apply for one more. So I applied for Akitas, and then I applied for 2. So it was 2 for 2. Uh-huh. And then when you had 4, you could apply for 4.
Right.
And what that application cycle does is it sets the judge up for learning how to learn new breeds.
Right.
And learning the ring and figuring out how to deal with exhibitors and keep your time. It was actually a very good starting system for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels like an endless supply of different systems to apply to judge, right?
Well, it took me 10 years to get my first group that way.
Oh, Lord. And I'm complaining about a year and a half these
right,
days.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I think it's really important. The system that they have now, the system that I've applied under, you have the option to apply as a breeder or the option to apply as from a handler perspective, right? So if you have handled and shown and had a lot of interaction with multiple breeds, you can include those breeds in your application. So my initial application, I have 3 sporting breeds, 2 hound breeds, a working breed, a toy breed, and juniors, right? So I had those that I felt very, very comfortable with, breeds that I'd spent a lot of time with. I was either a breeder or I'd shown a lot of them or I'd lived with them, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, there is some flexibility in this system. I think that's good, don't you?
I do. The other thing that the current system does that I like, so I have 4 groups. I have working, terrier, toy, and non-sporting. Mm-hmm. And so what I like is that you keep getting credits, so to speak, for your level. Mm-hmm. So once you're at one group, you don't have to do as many components as you do for your next application.
Right.
And then once you get to 4 groups, they say, okay, well, look, if you're good enough to do 4 groups right. and you're doing a good job, we're going to give you kudos and you can move forward. So that's where I am right now. Mm-hmm. And I've applied for a few hounds and I'm going to apply for a couple sporting. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to judge the breeds that I feel that I really enjoy mm-hmm. to start out with mm-hmm. and then see how it goes.
Right. I mean, that's kind of how I feel. Like the breeds that I've applied for, these are the breeds I care about, right? Like these are my heart breeds, if you will. And there's a few more in my second application that will be on those lines, right? That I needed to do mm-hmm. a little extra for that second application. But I think one of the things that's important for the listeners is to understand that all of the people who are out there in the middle of the ring have gone through some system or another like this. Some of the systems were more forgiving,
mm-hmm.
generous. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were more onerous, right? I mean, speak to that a little bit because you've been through some of these different systems and you've interviewed the judges that were applying in these systems.
I have. And the thing that I can tell you is, and I want to speak to this from both sides as someone who interview people. You know, some people interview better than others. Some people mm-hmm. are more comfortable. AKC allows judges to pretty much, if they want to go to California to interview with somebody they're comfortable with, That's been approved so far.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's also really important because I saw a lot of people who were not very comfortable. And that's hard from a rep's perspective because you want people to succeed.
Right.
I mean, we want good judges.
Right.
You know, it's not an evil thing. Everybody wants good judges.
Right. And I think maybe that's kind of a little secret sauce right there that I think all of you listeners need to hear for a minute. Nobody from the top of the American Kennel Club down to the actual individual judge in the ring wants to have judges that are incapable of doing their job. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, that's sport. Everything is a system. And I'm sure you understand systems.
Right. Right.
And so the dog show is a system. So everybody has to do their part. So the judges have to do their part. They have to do their homework. They have to do their best to understand a breed. The exhibitors have to read their standards and bring good dogs and understand that, you know, whether their dog is a good quality one or not. The AKC rep comes and helps mentor and tutor and work with the judges and work with the exhibitors so that everybody brings something that's going to support the sport of purebred dogs rather than tear it down. And those people that are out there that are crying wolf about how bad everything is are actually destroying our shows. We should be supporting each other and helping each other succeed. That's my goal.
Absolutely. No, that is so on point, Lee. Thank you. I'm sitting here. You can't see me. I am vigorously nodding my head. Okay. I just feel so strongly. And again, there's a new rumor every day and I hate them. Do you know what I'm saying? I really do. Whether it's about an individual, whether it's a bunch of people, whether it's about the sport, whether whatever it is, just go show your dog, go judge the dogs and do the very best you can and quit finding reasons to attack the system.
You know, I have something that I present to my group all the time, and we talk about it all the time, and I call it the Fave Five, and I'm sure you've heard of it. But who are the five people who are around you? Who are the biggest influencers? Who are you around the most? Who do you surround yourself with?
Yes.
Do you surround yourself with positive, forward-thinking people?
Yes.
If so, that's awesome, because that will rub off on you, and you will rub off on them. And this is not a Pollyanna thing.
Right.
We talked about that a little bit before.
Well, and I think we need to not be Pollyanna, right? Like you and I can both kind of get off in a little bit of that Pollyanna mode, right? We've been accused of it. I know I have.
No one ever accused me of being Pollyanna.
God knows I've been accused of it. How's that? And so, yeah, let's just own it. Bad people do bad things. Welcome to life, people, right? Bad people do bad things anywhere you go. And people make poor choices and people make poor decisions and those people run the gamut. And so let's not pretend that that's not real, but let's also understand that allowing one, if you will, allow me this horrendously trite little saying, one bad apple to ruin the bushel is sort of pointless.
Well, of course. And I think that's why we're having this discussion is that we can be positive and we can change the sport from the inside, but you cannot change those people who are negative and who are the bad apples. You can't change them. They're in the greater world that we're a part of.
Right.
So there we are, and we're looking at these, you know, people that we shouldn't be around. So let's not be around them.
Yes. Find a nice positive circle. You know, people who build each other up. If you need to go outside your breed, go outside your breed. Do whatever you need to do. Find people who will build you up, who will build the sport up, who are going to be able to offer constructive criticism. Because I tell my dogs all the time, they're practically perfect. But practically is sort of important.
There is no dog that's perfect. And I'm glad you brought that up. Because as a judge, standing in the middle of the ring, I've been judging since 2000 with my hiatus to work for AKC.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in that part of it for a long time. And there are times where you're standing there and you're waiting for the next dog to come in, hoping that it's better.
Please be better. Please.
Exactly. Please. Somebody. Oh, no. It's the open class. Oh, dear.
Right. Or somebody you expect to bring you a great dog. You're like, okay, this is going to be. Oh, no.
No. And so there you are. And you really want to do a good job with this assignment.
Mm-hmm.
You love your exhibitors. But you know you have to keep your mouth buttoned because you can't say anything. But you hope that your exhibitors will reflect. I like to say reflection is a powerful tool, and it is for all of us, for judges. Mrs. Clark was one of my judge mentors, and she said to me, you know, when I finish judging, I will think sometimes, oh, well, could I have done it this way or this way? She was reflective about what she had done. And she taught me that aspect of judging, that never think you're perfect, but always do your best. And that's what I do. And I think a lot of judges do.
My favorite story, and I've told this on this podcast before, but so listeners, if you've heard this one, just bear with me. But it is truly one of my favorite stories of all time. Ed Bivin, clearly one of the greats in our sport. I was showing an Akita bitch. This has been many, many, many moons ago. And it was a 4-day cluster somewhere. And Ed Bivin was judging the breed the first day and showed him the dog, whatever. I have no idea what happened with any of these placements, but I remember showing him the breed. And then I'm still showing the dog for the rest of the 3 days. And every single day from that first one that he judged it, Ed Bivin was sitting outside the Akita ring. And I watched this for several days. And this was not a stellar entry. This was really a pretty mediocre entry. Like, this one's not bad. This one's okay. This one's, dear God, right? Serious. And so I asked him, I said, Mr. Bivin, why are you still here watching this truly mediocre bunch of dogs for the fourth day running? He said, I just wanted to make sure I got it right. I mean, this is one of the greats in our sport. And I think instructs me, and I think should instruct all of us on what this is about.
I love that. I just love that.
I do too.
And, you know, it's what some people don't realize is that the judge has, you know, AKC says 2.4 minutes a dog, but really you have about a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And people are standing ringside, see the same dogs. As a rep, I would see the same dogs over months,
right?
Week in and week out, day in and day out. So I knew the dogs. I knew them well.
Right. Of course.
And particularly of the bigger entries, French Bulldogs come to mind because they're such big entries. We'd often observe judges there. And so you really have an opportunity to see so much more when you're sitting outside the ring. It's another thing that I highly recommend.
Yeah, that to me is so, so important to understand. And I knew it, but I'm learning it even more. Like, I am definitely not too smart to learn things. Trust me. And that to me, because you're standing there, you're in the ring, you're like, okay, I've got my make and shape. Okay, this one can't walk. Okay, right. And, you know, when you're a handler, particularly, you're used to evaluating the dogs in the ring, knowing which one's your competition, which one's not your competition, and moving forward, right? Know what you've got, what the other person has, and make decisions about how to present your dog based on that information. So I'm accustomed to making those sorts of snap judgments, but I've also seen those dogs, as you said, day in and day out. I know that one's cowhawked if they let him be lazy, right? I know, I know all of these things that the judge standing in the middle of the ring, I don't know that anymore.
It's a different way.
Yeah.
You know, the judges who are used to that evaluation like you are good judges. But I believe there's a learning curve.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, I'm not going to name any names, but one of the handlers last year, I watched do a breed at Montgomery County. And he was truly a presence in the center of the ring.
Right.
But this person has judged before in Europe and has judged in other venues. So he understands those trade-offs.
Right.
Sometimes other judges who just start out and only have that opportunity for a moment, it's a little more difficult.
Yes.
But I think it's important to keep in mind that judges try their best. They're not trying to screw anybody.
I think that right there, that's the most important thing for people to remember. And that's why I do these panel discussions, right? My Friday night forum, my Saturday symposium. That's why I moderate these things. Because I think that is so important for people to understand. And the only way, I think, in the way the American Kennel Club runs its shows these days, we've become so very careful to not offend anyone. Which, okay, I get it. I understand. That's great. But we've lost touch with some of this stuff, you know? And I think that the exhibitors having the opportunity to interact even in a moderated setting with judges or sit here and listen to these podcasts gives them a sense that these really are people and that they really are doing the very best they can based on the information they have and the experience they have and all the rest of these things.
I think that what judges really want is, please bring me a good dog.
Yes.
And we love it when you bring good dogs. Come, we love you.
Yes.
Don't make us stand there tight lipped.
Bring me a clean, pretty dog that can walk on all four of its legs and boom, I'm in heaven.
And don't make us stand there tight lipped because we're afraid that we might actually say something. Or
another one of my favorites. It's again, the compilation of all these podcast interviews. I've picked up some real nuggets. One of my favorites, again, Jenny Lyon. I interviewed her. She was one of my very first interviews when I very first started doing this. And she was talking about judging dogs and talking about giving critiques. And we were saying why we don't give critiques. And so she was going through in her beautiful, absolutely iron fist in a silk glove voice, talking about this one and this one and this one and this one that only a mother could love. And, you know, it was just beautiful. And I think that that is so important for people to understand. We want to find beautiful dogs, but if you don't bring us a beautiful dog, or if you haven't trained it so that we can see that it's a beautiful dog, right?
Well, I always try to find the virtues.
Yes.
And I'm always appreciative to my exhibitors when they bring me a dog with more virtues. And it's exciting.
Yes.
It makes your heart beat faster. Mm-hmm. The hair on the back of your neck stands up like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Right.
And that's the exciting part of being a judge. I mean, it really is in a nutshell.
Yep.
That's the love of judging, is that one dog or that great entry. Mm-hmm. I had the great honor of judging Ridgebacks in Texas earlier this year.
Oh, cool.
I had 60 of them.
Yep.
One was nicer than the next. It was spectacular. I was honored to just have my hands on these dogs. Mm. And most of them were well presented. I could mostly see them. It was just a great experience and one that I will truly cherish forever. And I had the opportunity to do a Basenji specialty this summer.
Right.
Another wonderful entry, 60-something dogs. So those are the entries that we love. And I think that, you know, you and I, Laura, were talking before about the American Kennel Club and, you know, how to get good judges, how to find the better judges.
Yeah.
And I think that it's not just finding the better judges, although that is really important. It's also training the exhibitors how to bring the good dogs.
Yeah. It is education across the board, right? Like if the exhibitor doesn't understand what makes a good dog of its breed, then they're going to be disappointed when the dog they love and think is perfect doesn't succeed. And so I think that education piece is super critical.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts, and that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, Laura at puredogtalk.com. And I'll hook you up with the details.
So what are some of your thoughts about that, Laura?
Well, I mean, I do my little bits of education, but I do my bit for God and country. But I think that, and this is part of what we were talking about, and I'm trying to say it the right way. I believe that all judges are not created equal. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, in terms of their ability to judge.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I believe that the experiences that people have in their lives, whether those experiences are showing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands of dogs, whether those experiences are breeding exceptionally good dogs in one breed whatever those experiences are, those inform the judges. And so I would love to see a world in which we could encourage more people with vast experience to join the ranks of the judging world. That's what I would like to see in my perfect world.
Well, yes. And we have had a few that have done that. And if you as an exhibitor ever have the opportunity to speak to some of these people who are highly regarded, do so. Most of them will be delighted to have a conversation with you about your breed. Take advantage of these people, I hate to say it, while they're alive.
Yes, that's why we have a podcast. Serious, it's dead serious. I mean, it is one of my major actual mission statements, is to preserve the knowledge of our legends while it's available. I wish to all that's holy that I had had enough sense to do something like this long before now. So,
well, I'm glad you did. And I haven't listened to everyone, but the ones that I've listened to are your genius, your own brand of genius, Laura. And I appreciate your asking me to come and speak as well, of course.
Well, I just think the most important piece is for people to focus on the positive, to understand that judges are there to do a good job. And if they fail to do a good job, it is not for a lack of trying. And knowing a little bit about your judges, research, like find out, what did this judge have as their original breed? Were they a handler? Did they show a whole bunch of X, Y, or Z? What is their basis of their knowledge? And that sort of research is really useful. And it's very different than that Facebook group that I never say its name.
Oh my gosh.
I know, we don't say its name. Don't say its name. Because when you know, for example, I know that you had Rottweilers, right? So if I am an exhibitor, I'm going to believe that you have a lot of knowledge in that breed, that in many breeds, there are going to be things that are important to you as a result of having come from that specific breed, right?
Well, to a degree. So there are some people who somehow think that I'm a tooth fairy.
Okay, there you go. This is a good one.
The truth is, I'm not. There are some basic things that I want to see. So I'll give you an example. If I'm judging a breed where there's a disqualification, mm-hmm. I want to see a dentition, mm-hmm. Number of teeth. Mm-hmm. I want to see the teeth.
Right.
And I want to see them correctly. If it's not a DQ, but the standard asks for it, I'm going to look at the sides. Just like AKC has a whole sheet on this.
We have a list. So just in case you guys were wondering.
Finally, right?
I know, so exciting. Awesome. In case our listeners are wondering, we actually get lots and lots of cheat sheets, and that's a godsend. So you can put it in your folder and look and say, uh-oh, I have to actually like open the sides of this dog's mouth or have the exhibitor do it.
That's exactly right. So what I'm looking at in toys, I mean, if you've got, for example, the Havanese has a disqualification for lip pigment and irim pigment.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to look for that.
Right.
That's my job.
Right.
And there are many exhibitors who ask me, what are you looking at? And I say to them, well, your standard has a disqualification for X. Mm-hmm. And so I need to see that. And there are, truthfully, when you talk about judges being equal or unequal, there are some judges who go through the motions of looking at the mouths or whatever the DQ is and may never actually see it. I mean, I've disqualified several Rottweilers for bad bites, and they say, "What? My dog has both its majors." Well, you know, I had to ask twice to have you show me the front of that mouth.
Right.
And that's a disqualifying mouth. That's undershot.
Right. Right. Well, and I think too, back to the, let's not be Pollyanna, let's be realistic, that falls into this category of there are some judges are better than others, and that's just reality check. And the judges who are going through the motions, who have checked all the boxes, okay, and filled out all the paperwork or what have you, may not have the sense of a breed, the essence of a breed, though they would like to. I think that sometimes they don't actually soak up that essence. And it can be bad judges' education on the national club's part. It can be lots of reasons why. But I think that's a thing. Would you agree with that?
Well, It is. And I want to mention this while we're talking about education and national clubs. I recently met with someone at one of the larger clusters to talk about their breed. And she's chairman of her judge's education. And I said, well, do you have a dog here that we could talk about? And she said, well, I have a dog here, but I'm not going to show him to you. And I said, so you have a dog that you think has an ideal head for the breed and a breed that's a rare breed, and you're not going to show him to me. Why? And she said, oh, well, because there's the appearance of impropriety that I might be trying to influence you. And I said, it is your job to influence me. It is your job to influence me so that I know what a good ex dog head looks like.
But I will tell you, I've been that woman that you were talking to. I have been nailed by my parent club for bringing my own dogs because they were the only ones I could get my hands on and using them as hands-on examples. It is a struggle. I mean, this literally, the struggle is real, man.
But shame on the national clubs for being so petty that they don't give someone with a lot of knowledge and good dogs the opportunity and the trust.
Right.
That they don't give them the trust to say, I think she will tell the good things and the bad things, because honestly, I'll never judge that dog because it's going to take me 2 years to get free.
Exactly. You'll never see him. Right. And this is a whole conversation unto itself, judges education, good ones, bad ones, and indifferent ones. I do a lot of judges education for my breed and have done for years. I've even taken on doing some judges education in my mother's breed since she passed away.
Wow.
Yeah, serious. Well, I grew up with them, so it's legit, but it's just frustrating because the judges need dogs to put their hands on. And it is almost impossible to get people, A, to travel if they're not entered in the dog show. I mean, I can't blame them. Nobody's paying them to do this, right? So you got to get dogs there. You got to preferably get good dogs there. But wait for it. You can't use any of the top specials because, you know, that's bad. And I mean, when I say the struggle is real, I'm not kidding.
No, it is. I do judges education for Rottweilers and also I'm approved to do Tibetan Terriers. And fortunately, I have retired dogs that I can bring, but people are afraid that their dog is going to be, as they say, shredded.
Yes, we'll say bad things or whatever. Right.
You know, when I use somebody's dog, if it's not pretty, I'll say something good about this dog has great feet.
Right. You can find something.
Cat feet.
Yeah.
Or this is an ideal head for a bitch. This is a beautiful head. The ear is correctly placed.
Right.
I'll be very specific and descriptive using the verbiage of the standard on each dog and say something positive. And people will bring me dogs to use in judges education because of that.
Right.
I'm not interested in tearing your dog down or creating any strife. I just want the judges to be able to have something to learn on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm the same way, but I'm saying it's a challenge. And I think that not every club is as fortunate. I've been to judges education presentations as a aspirant judge in breeds that I showed a lot of, for example. And I wind up not being able to keep my mouth shut because the things they're saying are wrong.
Oh, well, there's that. There's that.
So when it comes to judges, let's, you know, bring this back to on point here. It isn't always just the judge's problem, right? Like, they have to be educated. Who's doing the education?
Well, okay. I want the person who educates me to have the most knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I want to have a variety of opinions and see a variety of dogs. Mm-hmm. Because frankly, I don't want to get in the middle of that ring and look stupid.
Right.
I want to look like a genius, right? Don't we all?
We all want to look like geniuses. So if we're not being educated by geniuses, then what do?
Exactly. So then you don't apply for the breed until you find a genius. That's what you do.
Well, that's what you and I would do. But I'm saying... Yeah. Going back to the let's not be Pollyanna part.
All right.
Okay. So seriously, listeners, the important thing that I want you to take away from this is understand and appreciate and recognize what the judges are there to do, why they're there to do it, how they've gone about getting there, and why they're going through this grief and aggravation. I mean, the most hated person at the dog show hello, I volunteered for this.
Right, yeah.
You know, or practically. So anyway, that's my thinking. Lee, what's your wrap up on that?
I would like people to understand that the process that judges go through, I'd like them to take the time to go on the AKC website and read all that judges have to do. I'd like there to be some understanding of their own breed. Mm-hmm. Please memorize your breed standard.
Hey, how about if you read it? Come on, start with that. Come on, Lee. That's one of my things. You know, read your breed standard.
I have a special system to help people figure out how to learn their own breed standard.
Yes.
I call it the Spotlight On member presentation.
I love it.
And I show people how to do that.
I love it.
It is amazing how much people can learn when they have a little guidance on how to learn.
Right.
And I think AKC gets it right in that they do understand that judges need education and they have check boxes. Mm-hmm. And those people who really care are going to make sure that they not only check those boxes, but they have some in-depth learning experiences.
Right. And I think that that is the most important part. So that goes back to your research, right?
I was going to say, so yep. How do you know? Well, go and do your research. Talk to the judge. Say, hey, I really loved how you judged our breed today. Who was your mentor?
Right. That's an easy thing to ask. Or, hey, I really am curious who your mentor was, even if you didn't love what they did, right? So I think that bottom line, listeners, judges are people too. None of them were hatched from an egg. They all started in the same exact place that you are today. And they all had to learn. And they're all in various stages of learning.
And I want to add one more thing, Laura. If they had known when they were in your position, when they started, that they were going to be doing it today, they would have kept better records.
Oh my God.
I had
no truer statement ever made.
I swear I had 1,000 shows documented on my first application. 1,000 shows. Oh, I sat there and did it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. If anybody had any idea how many hours people put in, I had to go back and find dogs from the 90s in handling. 90s. Oh, yeah. Like they don't even keep records anymore.
That was back in the dark ages.
I'm saying, I was never going to judge. This was not the path I was going to follow. I didn't keep any of those records. I had to recreate it from whole cloth.
Yep. I had a young man come to me a number of years ago now. I'm going to say 5 years ago. And he came to me and he said, and this is not somebody who's had a lot of dog experience. And he said to me, I'd like to judge. And I said, well, I can help you with that. Create documentation every time you walk in the ring of the dog, the AKC number, and what the dog did, and keep it in a file somewhere. Mm-hmm. And when you're ready, submit it to AKC in their format. Well, you know what? 5 years later, this young man is judging. Mm-hmm. And he had enough experience to do that, but mm-hmm. that's what he started to do. So even if you think you're not going to, what a great exercise to sit down and document all your shows, yeah. because there's proof that people who document are more successful at their endeavors.
Ooh, I like that. That's good. It makes you think about it, really focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yep. Guys, there's your dog show mentor tip for the day. All right. Well, Lee, thank you so much. I have taken plenty of your time on a Friday evening, and I very much appreciate you joining me. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.